Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Okay, well, today we've got a great guest on, and he's got a new book coming out, and it's called Giving the Devil His Due, and of course it's Dr. Michael Shermer. Thank you for being here, Michael.
Hi guys, nice to be here. I'm socially isolated in Santa Barbara, which could be worse.
It could be. Yeah. Oh, so how's everything going for you right now? I see you got not the best time to be putting a book out either, is it?
No, it's the worst possible time to have a new book. First, there's no bookstores open anywhere on the planet, so although Amazon is open. And in fact, as an encouraging sign, they're hiring. Apparently 100,000 people have already hired, like 80,000 or something like that. But I kind of feel bad, you know, promoting a book when, you know, people are dying and all these frontline workers and medical personnel, you know, huge risks. I feel like I'm doing nothing other than just producing content for people to consume that is not related. It's not, you know, coronavirus. Viruses is not, you know, anything I know much about. So, you know, I feel, you know, I kind of feel guilty, actually.
Well, I wouldn't. I think a lot of the people like yourself and Steve Novella and things like that, they keep a lot of this conspiracy and wild stories calm. It gives them a little bit of...
Balance. Well, there is that. I mean, there's a lot of corona craziness, you know, that it's related to the 5G internet system, and Bill Gates is somehow involved, you know, like Bill Gates needs more money and power. Right. You know, and then there's, you know, just all the kind of crazy, whether it's a bioweapon invented by the Chinese. Apparently, there was a paper published in Nature last week debunking that one, showing how they can tell, you know, pretty close to the origin of a virus like this. It certainly seems like a bat related in those wet markets in Wuhan. And, you know, there's this cave in Texas that has 20 million bats. You know, bats are mammals. They're, you know, they live in dense colonies like people do. So, you know, there's a lot of logic behind why the virus would make that leap from bats to humans, much like the AIDS one did from monkeys to humans. And, you know, I've been tracking apocalyptic narrative stories for most of my adult life since I was in college, and I read, you know, The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey. You know, the end times are near. It's, you know, it's all going to end now. And pandemics were always kind of in the list, even the non-goofy stuff, just like, here are the top 10 things that could wipe us out, you know, nuclear weapons and an asteroid and so on. You know, pandemics was always on the list, and I was at TED when Bill Gates gave that lecture about, you know, the pandemic is the next big thing we should be worried about. And all of us were like, yeah, they said that about nuclear weapons, they said that about this and that, you know, nothing happened, everything's going to be fine. Well, Maybe not.
What do you think the fallout's going to be? Like, you know, when this kind of hits its peak and we kind of get back and society starts running again, do you think that do you think it'll take a while for people to really start socializing like they did?
Yeah, I do. Because no matter when the curfew is lifted, so to speak, and people go back to work and restaurants and whatnot, you know, the virus isn't going to leave. The virus isn't going to go, oh, well, President Trump said we have to leave now. It's still around. And from what I'm hearing from disease experts, you know, like people like Fauci, who you can trust, this could just go into the general circulation that cold viruses and flu viruses are already there that we deal with every year, every season, and we get our flu shots and whatnot. I think we're all just going to get our coronavirus shots every year because it's going to be around. Maybe it'll mutate and become less dangerous, or maybe it'll mutate and become more dangerous. But in any case, it's not going to just disappear. I think we're just going to have to deal with this. So simple things like customs of, you know, shaking hands, I think that's gone. And, you know, hugging, you know, maybe not such a good thing unless it's a family member. Maybe we'll all adopt the yoga bow or the Japanese bow, you know, just to sort of, I acknowledge you as somebody I care about, or that you're standing before me and you bow, and then we're done. Then we're, you know, like a handshake, but not. And I just think things like, you know, the surfaces that you touch, cleaning products sales will go up perhaps. I think there's going to be a huge decline in toilet paper sales in about 4 months when people quit hoarding and they're like, well, now what? I got 6 years of toilet paper in my washroom. So, yeah. So I think that. Other things that are more serious, I do think supply chain are going to make adjustments to what we probably should have on hand in hospitals. Things like extra gloves, you know, PPEs, gloves, masks, and ventilators, things like that. I think we were woefully unprepared for that, you know, for understandable reasons, because people are worried about other things. And so that'll change economically. The stock market will recover in a matter of 6 months to a year, I'm quite sure. And I've developed a little trick of my own. I'm 65, so, you know, I have a stock portfolio of my 401k, you know, SEP IRA retirement account, basically. And, you know, of course, like everybody else, I only check on the good days and I sort of peek on the bad days and try not to cringe and feel depressed. But my trick is I compare to where it was last at that level. And it turns out, you know, right now, as of today, we're pretty much back to where we were in the fall of 2018 when everybody was delighted with the market. Okay, so, and the fact is, you don't gain or lose any money in the market until you sell your stocks. So the fact is, back in fall of 2018, when you thought you had all that money, you didn't have that money because you weren't selling your stocks. I'm talking about people that just, you know, invested long term, not day traders.
Yeah.
And so just kind of try to think of it like that. And that, in fact, you know, it's not going to matter how much the market goes up and down, as long as you don't sell your stocks. Then it'll, you know, I think that'll come back. What's unclear is certain industries, like people that specialize in meetings, or even theaters. I was thinking about this. Why do we need to go to theaters? I haven't been to a theater in years because I have a 4-year-old now, and, you know, we're locked in at home. But no problem. I stream Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Video. There's just endless content. Why would I go to a theater? And now, why would I go to a theater when there's people in there coughing and hacking and sneezing? You know, I think theaters could all be converted into, you know, like condominiums or apartment complexes or something. And the film industry will recover nicely. They'll just figure out a new way to monetize the release, the rollout of their films through live streaming or pay-per-view or, you know, whatever. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of new structuring of old industries to adjust to this.
I think college campuses, too, are another one where this can happen, because one thing I've noticed, you know, we were given a couple days to switch all our classes to some form of online teaching, and it seems like most people have been able to do it given the technology that's available. And it just seems like, you know, colleges have to spend a lot of money on classroom space. It seems like they could start moving towards hybrid models where, you know, some classes are held in person, some are online, or half and half. But I could see that for all meetings and even jobs that people have. Like, why are you making people drive places to do a job they could do at home?
Right, exactly. I'm a professor at Chapman University, and of course, like you and everybody else, you know, it just shut down right before spring break, and I haven't seen the students since, and I won't, I guess, until the fall. But you know, I've been recording my lectures in a studio here in Santa Barbara. They're pretty high quality. We're making them publicly available for free for anybody to watch anytime. You can just go to skeptic.com. They're right there on the homepage, and my students get them. I send them a little quiz, and I give them a week to watch the lecture and do the quiz, and then we're just kind of grinding along that way. Now, I probably should be doing Zoom, but although now I see Zoom has some issues, not just bandwidth issues, but also Zoom bombing. You've probably heard of Zoom bombing. Yeah, so maybe, you know, that's not such a good thing, and I know the Zoom company guys are trying to figure that out, how to build in more protection. So, but that'll change, and so, you know, there's so many options educationally now. It's just staggering how much content there is in so many different sources. You know, I mean, it's kind of what I do for a living, you know, Audible.com and the Teaching Company, and, you know, just endless courses. Steve Pinker just uploaded his lectures at Harvard on his course Rationality. Free. Anybody could watch them. There's all those MOOC courses that people recorded. Paul Bloom at Yale has a great course on morality. You can watch for free. You know, these are like world-class scientists and scholars at world-class universities that anybody can take their class for free. You don't have to pay the $50,000 a year and live in a dorm and so on. That's not to say we'll never need brick-and-mortar buildings again for universities. I think there is a value to a seminar-style class in which you're sitting around a table talking. You know that, but somebody at a blackboard yammering away for an hour, you know, maybe that's not critical that you are there in the classroom, and that may change.
So I want to get into the new book a little bit. So you're asking us to give the devil his due, but you don't believe in the devil. So so what gives?
Yeah. Well, of course, it's metaphorical. The devil is whoever you disagree with that you would like to cancel out or censor or make illegal and so on. And so the devil has to be given his due for your own safety's sake. That is to say, once you set up norms, rules, or laws censoring speech you don't like or you disagree with or that you determine to be hateful or even dangerous, then what's to stop somebody down the line say, well, you know what, Shermer, I don't like what you're saying. I think it's hateful. In fact, I think it's dangerous. I think it's an incitement to violence. Therefore, you're censored. And then I'll be standing there going, I'm not crazy about that. And there are examples that I present in the book of in the 19th century, in the 1850s, a lot of northern abolitionists went to the South to give speeches about the horrors of slavery. And newspapers tried to get their, you know, articles, you know, newspapers distributed in the South, and preachers wanted to go there and preach about the evils of slavery. And Southern politicians made the argument, you know, this kind of speech could lead to slave insurrections, and that could cause violence and even deaths of slave owners. We can't have that. No, they didn't use the word hate speech, but that's essentially what they argued. And the same thing happened in the South in the civil rights movement in the 1950s and 60s, where it was believed that people like Martin Luther King and especially Malcolm X, that the kinds of speeches they were giving were possibly incitement to violence, and therefore they should be censored. Now, this all goes back to, in the 20th century, it goes back to the famous 1919 case of Schenck versus the United States, in which the Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes determined, and I'll just read his judgment here. This is 1919 case Schenck versus the United States. The most stringent protection of free speech would not protect a man in falsely shouting fire in a theater and causing a panic. The question in every case is whether the words used are used in such circumstances and are of such a nature as to create a clear and present danger that they will bring about the substantive evils that Congress has a right to prevent. It is a question of proximity and degree. So those two clauses, the falsely shouting fire in the theater and clear and present danger, have come down to us as the bulwark against speech we don't like. And the problem is that it's concept creep or mission creep, that, you know, once you create the category, you can put more and more things into it that you just happen to disagree with. Now, what was this clear and present danger in 1919? Schenck was the head of the Socialist Party in Philadelphia, and he was distributing flyers to draft age men who the United States, as it was entering the First World War, were being drafted, you know, conscription. And Schenck argued that that's a violation of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, which gives you autonomy over your own body. And in a way, the government saying, well, no, no, we own your body and we're sending you off to war where you may die, and too bad, because this is a clear and present danger. And so anyone that protests draft is therefore a clear and present danger to our nation, therefore must be silenced. Whoa, to modern ears, that just sounds crazy. I mean, you know, 1960s was all about protesting the draft in the Vietnam War, but that's how that began. And so there's always been this category that's growing in size in which everything gets thrown in there that somebody just happens to disagree with.
So let me take a modern example, and let me see where you come down on this. So there is a lot of misinformation going around now about coronavirus,
yeah,
with people saying it's caused by 5G or the effects are being exaggerated for political gain, perhaps by, you know, President Trump's competitors. And those beliefs can lead people to not engage in best practices. So in other words, the misinformation gets out there, people will buy into it, and then they will potentially create a danger for other people. So what would be the remedy for something like this where you would potentially have danger?
Yep, more speech, better speech, fact-checking. Yeah. You know, just in fact, go ahead and make a big deal about these crazy conspiracy theories. Publicize about them, cover it on the news, and say, here is why it's wrong, and here is the harm it's causing. That is, you know, let 1,000 flowers bloom and just see which ones are exposed by the sunlight to where they're in error. As opposed to what? Okay, so once we start to censor, say someone like Alex Jones, and you know, he's causing, you know, harm to people and so on. Now, okay, I don't like Alex Jones, but, you know, once you start down that road, then what about other sources that are maybe not the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, but, you know, they're a second level, say, media source, or third level, or tertiary, whatever. You know, should they be shut down? Then who's going to do that? You know, is Fauci going to have a subdivision under his control that says, you know, people that deviate from what the CDC says about coronavirus, we're going to deplatform them or arrest them for causing harm? Again, it's a dangerous road to go down, because once that's set up in place in a legal system, you know, precedence is very strong in the legal system, then the next pandemic that, you know, somebody says, well, I think it's this, and particularly when we don't know much, we need to hear a lot of different voices and hopefully weed out the nuttier ones, and a few will rise to the top. There was this doc posted a YouTube video the other day saying he thinks it's a virus, but it's not. The harm it's causing in lungs is not what the CDC and Fauci and these guys think it is. He thinks it's more related to something like high altitude sickness, and therefore what? I don't know. He just kind of rambled on about this and said he didn't know much about high altitude sickness, but it seemed to resemble what he was seeing in his emergency, in his ER, as people were coming in. Okay, interesting. I thought, all right, well, you know, this guy's a doc. I'm not a doc. What do I know? So I sent it off to Harriet Hull, the skeptic who does our column in Skeptic on these kinds of issues. And, you know, she pointed out several things about this that, you know, I thought, yep, okay, right, that's right. All right, so he's wrong. Never mind. But, again, we have to give those people a voice so that the other people can be heard, the people that turn out to be right.
So, now, a lot of what you're talking about is sort of, do we censor people who engage in speech we don't like? But what the government's done lately is they are trying to not do that, because that would be censorship. What they're trying to do instead is to regulate, or at least threaten to regulate, tech companies that essentially publish the speech. So do you draw a line there too?
No.
Or is it a different line?
Well, there, so we have to make a distinction there between public and private. You know, the First Amendment applies to the government censoring speech. You know, a private company like Google / YouTube or any of the other tech companies, you know, they can do whatever they want, and I want to give them the freedom to be able to do that. What I worry about is the blending of the two, when the government, if the government comes in and says, all right, Google / YouTube / Alphabet, you have to start now screening out crazy conspiracy theories, let's say. This is Sacha Baron Cohen gave a speech. He's given some big award at a Jewish group in England when he spoke out against Holocaust denial. Okay, well, I know a lot about Holocaust denial, and I'm quite sure they're wrong, and maybe they're even anti-Semitic, some of them. Okay, but who's gonna screen out which deniers' claims and theories and conspiracy theories? Who's supposed to do that, and what's the criteria? So the analogy I use in the book is, let's say I'm interested in how many Native Americans died since 1492 when Europeans first came. You know, the colonialization and genocide and guns, germs, and steel that killed out, you know, how many? Well, we don't know for sure because we're not sure how many were here to begin with. Maybe it was 90 million, maybe it was 70, maybe it was 50 million died. You know, it's a debatable point. At the very least. But let's say I come up and I publish a paper, and so I think it was 10 million. And furthermore, I think most of them died of disease, not on the intention of the Europeans who came here. Well, am I a Holocaust denier now, and therefore my speech should be censored or I should be jailed? You know, it's good to remember in that particular case, Holocaust denial is illegal in Canada and Germany, Austria, France, Australia, New Zealand. Illegal. I mean, you cannot give a talk at a, you know, hotel room or at a classroom or whatever about this. And the case I talk about in the book is David Irving, you know, who I have debated. I have written about him. I have debunked him thoroughly. He is wrong, wrong, wrong. And he probably is an anti-Semite, as the judge called him in his court case against Deborah Lipstadt. I'm sure of all that. But I still defend him, and I did in his court case. He flew to Vienna from London to give a talk, an invited talk, just a group, small group of people that were kind of interested in this fringe conspiracy theory that the Holocaust never happened the way we think it did. And he was arrested at the airport. You know, his passport was flagged, so once they scanned it, they went, oh, it's this David Irving guy. You know, what are you doing here? I'm here to give a speech about World War II. Well, what about World War II? Well, you know, and then before you know it, he's in jail and he had a court case. And I wrote a letter to the judge saying, you know what? I don't like this guy and I know he's wrong, but, you know, jailing somebody for just thinking about giving a talk, that's a thought crime. You know, now we're in Orwell's crazy world of, you know, these autocrats, you know, controlling people's speech and thought. You know, that's really dangerous. I'd rather people like David Irving be totally exposed for everybody to see why they're wrong and then just let it go from there.
But should we allow these ideas to proliferate on social media? I mean, putting aside the idea that, yes, it's, you know, these are private companies and they could allow it or disallow it if they want, but that's not the issue we've been dealing with for the last 2 years. You've had government sort of putting their thumb on Zuckerberg and other people saying, we want you to clean this up. And, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen, as you mentioned in his speech, I mean, he's trying to get them to essentially take all sorts of things down. I mean, should they be doing that? I mean, are there some things that are too much of a danger? It should be, yes, you can think it, and yes, you can say it, but no, you can't put it on a place where anyone else can see it.
Here's what I wrote about that. Let's see, practically speaking, such filtering of content would require hiring armies of censors to read or review every article, essay, video, or statement of any kind, a rather formidable requirement given that, for example, there are 1.3 billion YouTube users who upload 300 hours of video every minute, with 5 billion videos viewed each day. It would take a Napoleonic-sized army to screen them all. I mean, and then continuing, legally, Cohen's recommendations are not purely private forms of censorship. Fines should be levied, he said. Well, by whom? And he continues, maybe it's time to tell Mark Zuckerberg and the CEOs of these companies, you already allowed one foreign power to interfere in our elections. You already facilitated one genocide in Myanmar. do it again and you go to jail. Jail? Prison time? Wow. I mean, okay. So, I mean, I get the emotion behind it, of course. You know, it's infuriating to listen to some of these crazy ideas, and some people do believe them for sure. Like when Alex Jones rambled on about Sandy Hook as a false flag operation, and some of his, you know, nutball followers went to some of the homes of the families, victims' families. I mean, this is terrible. But making that a crime, oh boy, you know, that's a very dangerous road to go down.
So one thing that always bothers me with these pushes to censor social media is that a lot of the people pushing for the censorship, the politicians, often get lots of facts wrong or don't care about facts or are really interested in, you know, pushing their own conspiracy theories and just banning the other guys.
Yeah. Right, exactly, right. So with the coronavirus thing, you know, you could see Trump critics saying, you know, he's using this crisis to gain more power like Putin is and Orban in Hungary and Erdogan in Turkey and, you know, so forth, China, North Korea. And so, that's a kind of conspiracy. This is what he's going to do. And then when he doesn't do it, you know, he says, no, I'm going to let the governors decide whether they want to close down their states. You know, then he's hammered for that. So, you know, we just have to allow people to be critical of our public officials, because they're going to, whatever they do, people are not going to like it. Some people, as opposed to deciding which voices we're going to allow. Again, that's just it's such a dangerous road to go down. I mean, so like in the case of the demonetizing of videos that YouTube does, I know many friends, like my friend Dave Rubin, who has a show, or a Ben Shapiro, Dennis Prager. These are conservatives. Now, I don't agree with Dave Rubin's more of a classical liberal, but I don't agree with all their policies. I disagree with them on a lot of issues. But the idea that they should be censored in some way, their videos demonetized, in the case of PragerU videos, a lot of them are screened out of places where you could watch them, like in libraries and schools. Well, wait a minute. Who's deciding that? Well, okay, obviously Google has a team or some algorithms that engineers have designed to try to flag those. But, you know, again, that's a kind of censorship. You know, I mean, why not just let all the flowers flourish and bloom and see which ones rise to the top and give viewers, consumers of content, a little more credit for being discriminating. Now, to be sure, there's examples where that's not such a good idea, it seems. But who decides that? That's the problem, as I see it.
So one thing that's been bothering me lately is, you know, after 2016, there was, particularly on the losing side of the election, a lot of people looking for a boogeyman to blame, and they focused on Russia or a conspiracy with Russia. And clearly Russia did try to, sow discord. And I think immediately after the 2016 election, there were a lot of people thinking, oh, Russia tipped it in Trump's favor. But what the political scientists have been finding is, no, it's, you know, it really doesn't look that way. And
right.
it's tougher to change people's minds about who to vote for than we're giving them credit. Anyway, I saw a congressional testimony where there was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Questioning Mark Zuckerberg, and she said, you know, your platform is pushing all these conspiracy theories and, you know, misinformation. And because Russia had such a big impact on 2016, you know, then she went on saying, you know, what are you going to do to take this stuff out? And it's just like embedded in her question was a bunch of, you know, a bunch of misinformation suggesting that there was a bigger effect there than there really is. And I'm just sort of, you know, particularly when it comes to Congress people, I mean, they say so many things that are wrong and factually incorrect, but so many of them want to pull the trigger on censoring social media.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, new research the research you just referenced that I'm familiar with shows that the Russian meddling had very little effect at all. I mean, if you're already inclined to believe that Hillary was running a pedophile scheme out of a pizzeria, you know, you've lost your mind. You're never going to vote for her no matter what anyway, whether that's true or not, or whether somebody corrects you about that. Right. So the kinds of people that consume that crazy content were already convinced they hated Hillary. So, there's no vote swapping sides there. And Hugo Mercier has a new book out called Not Born Yesterday, cognitive scientist who studies these sorts of things. And, he shows on so many levels that these sorts of influencers have very little effect. Advertising has very little effect on what people consume. Political advertising, he says, is pretty much worthless. All you're really trying to do is signal to your base that you're the top candidate in the party. But getting people to switch parties or switch sides because of ads that you run, he shows, is pretty much ineffective, totally a total waste of money. And then even more seriously, I really enjoyed this conversation I had with him in his book on the Nazis, because I've always been curious how you get a group of, like Germans in the 1920s and 30s, who are highly educated, highly cultured, intelligent people, leaders of the free world in Europe and so on, to become Nazis seemingly overnight. And the answer seems to be they didn't. Most of them did not embrace the exterminationist ideology of the Nazis. Initially because of the economic success after 1933 as coming out of the Depression in the mid to late 30s. Of course, the German people liked that economically, and most of them just tried to ignore the sort of crazy extremes of Nazi ideology. But I'm convinced now that no Hitler, no Holocaust, and probably no Hitler, no World War II. Most Germans did not want war. They did not want to exterminate Jews. They weren't crazy about Jews. Anti-Semitism was pretty rampant throughout Europe, going back to Martin Luther and all the way into the 1930s. But most of them didn't think the Jews should be exterminated. That was a Hitlerian policy that his underlings maintained. Now, the way that they maintained that ideology when they didn't have the majority support was through two phenomena. One is pluralistic ignorance, or the spiral of silence, where everybody thinks everybody else believes something. And then a punishment of dissenters who are willing to stand up and say, the emperor has no clothes, and everybody goes, oh, I guess it's okay for me to express that. And then the whole spiral of silence would fall apart if dissenters could speak out. But, of course, what autocrats and dictators do when they come to power is get rid of dissenters and close the press. Because a free press is the one solution. Free speech and free press is the solution to that kind of problem. So once you build a KL system like the Nazis did, or the Gulag system like the Soviets did, then you don't have to have the majority. You can have a small minority if you have the power to control dissenters and the press.
So outside of the internet, it seems like there are big battles taking place now regarding free speech on college campuses. So what have you seen? I mean, you work on a college campus. Are you experiencing pushback against free speech?
Well, two thoughts on that. I don't personally see it very often. And before all this happened in the last few months, you know, I used to give quite a few public talks at universities around the country, maybe a dozen or a year or so. And I would never see, you know, these riots and paroxysms of student protests and so on. But most of my talks are more science related than political related. And I'm not a conservative. You know, I'm not like Milo Yiannopoulos coming on campus to inflame the libtards and get them all riled up. And I'm not like Ben Shapiro coming to talk about pro-life, you know, which gets students all riled up. So maybe there's a selection there. But here's how I think about it, that I think most of the time most students are just holed up in their dorms and they're partying. They're just doing their thing, going to class, whatever, that the few eruptions that we've seen, and there's, you know, documented dozens and dozens of them, enough that, you know, Tucker Carlson used to have his weekly episode Campus Craziness segment, that, you know, he had enough material once a week to fill about 12 to 15 minutes of a segment of campus craziness. But it's not like if you walk into any college campus now, you're going to see all this craziness. You just don't. It's not that common. But it's extreme enough that it makes the news. So there's a selection bias there. More dangerous, though, that I have seen is self-censoring. That is, when I ask my students, how many of you self-censor? You don't say what you're really thinking in class on some hot-button political, religious, economic, ideological issue. And they all raise their hand. They're all super sensitive and careful and nervous about saying something that could offend somebody because of the consequences that we've all seen in the last, I don't know, about 5-6 years. So it's about 2013 or so is when this started. And the thing that's behind my book that is that this used to be a liberal cause. You know, free speech, free thought, the ACLU, that's a liberal organization. You know, in the 60s, the free thought movement, UC Berkeley. This is an issue that liberals always supported. Why is it I'm getting, you know, the most supportive for this from conservatives, people like, again, Ben Shapiro, Dinesh D'Souza. You know, these are the kind of people going, yeah, we believe in free speech. Like, wait a minute, you certainly didn't decades ago. So what happened? All right, so I, you know, explore this. What went wrong? And, you know, I think it does go back to the civil rights movement, and it starts with this idea that there is such a thing as hateful speech, which I agree there is. You know, using the N-word to describe an African American, or the C-word to describe a woman, or calling Jews kikes, and, you know, Japanese or nips, or Vietnamese or gooks, and so on. You know, these are not good words. Don't be a dick. Don't use those words. I agree. We should get rid of those words. But the moment you start going down that path and go, okay, we're going to have a list. We're going to make a list. We'll call them microaggressions. These are the sorts of things you shouldn't say. And it starts with the N-word, which everybody goes, yep, that's good. Let's put that on the list. And then we start adding words and then phrases, like, where are you from? Or, wow, you're really good at math. Or if it's Asian, of course you're good at math. You know, these kinds of stereotypes we have that people say. Then all of a sudden the list, like UCLA issued one, I reprint in the book from 2016, I think it was. You know, there was like, you know, many pages long in small type of all the things you shouldn't say. And it's like, holy moly, what has gone on here? This is insane. You know, so people are walking around campus with this list in their head, like, oh boy, I better not say anything. I wonder if I should say it this way. And so people then become afraid to speak out and say something for fear that they'll be, you know, canceled. But, you know, the cancel culture is pretty vibrant on social media. So that's a kind of punishment of dissent. It's not a legal punishment. No one's going to send you to the gulag at the University of California system, but it's sort of a subjective, personal, psychological gulag where you are isolated and canceled, and we're not going to, you know, socialize with you because you hold the wrong thoughts. And then that continues. Like, well, what if I'm, you know, kind of pro-life on the abortion issue? I'm conflicted. You know, how could you even consider the pro-life position? You know, you are canceled, and so on. There's just so many issues like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, everybody is afraid to even speak.
So do you worry about that yourself? Do you think that you would face backlash just for being in favor of free speech, regardless of what you use that freedom for?
Well, I will tell you here, let me look this up. You know, I'm on a kind of a book tour, as it were, a virtual book tour. And this source, ProPublica, got a copy of the book, and my publicist contacted the editor there. And let's see, what did she say? What your author is proposing is asinine. Whoa! You know, I mean, come on. This used to be a liberal cause. I'm saying free speech, free thought, let people have their voice. This is how civil rights were won, by minority oppressed people speaking up and saying, stop doing that. We don't want to tolerate that anymore. We're going to fight back. You know, and that's how moral progress happens, is, you know, not from the top down, so, although sometimes you need that. We had to fight a war to end slavery, you know, at some point. I think it was it Eisenhower or Kennedy that had to send the troops in to desegregate, I think it was Alabama schools, you know, federal troops, you know, and because the governor there said, you know, we're not going to integrate our schools, you know, segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And the president said, no, you are segregating, and we're sending in men with guns to make sure you do. Sometimes that's what it takes, but most of the time it happens from the bottom up, of just people speaking their minds and then changing the way we write and think and talk and speak through television scripts and film screenplays, novels. You know, Richard Dawkins makes this point. You can pinpoint when a novel was published down to about the decade based on the language used to describe Jews, blacks, and women. And it's like the first time I saw that, I went, wow, that's true. That's incredible. How did that happen? And then, you know, but again, no laws were passed that said you can't write a novel in which you use this word. It just happened because people changed the way they think and speak about other people in the right direction, without any top-down laws or anything like that. Just people changing their way they think about other people by those people saying, I don't like it when you call me that. Okay, so again, that requires people feel free to speak their minds.
So you brought up cancel culture online, where if somebody steps out of line and says something wrong, sometimes they do say, you know, people will say things that are offensive, but sometimes they do it unintentionally, or sometimes it doesn't really cross a serious line, it's just interpreted that way. But I would suggest that some form of cancel culture is appropriate in moving the dialogue forward, in the sense that people should be held accountable for things they say. I mean, at what point does that go too far?
That's a hard one. It's hard to know where to draw the line, because yes, you should be free to speak your mind and criticize someone you disagree with. Yes, absolutely. I guess the problem with social media is the anonymity tips people into the direction of being really nasty and mean. You know, it's not that you're wrong, you're evil, you know, and I hate you, and, you know, I'm never speaking to you again, and I'm going to unfollow you. Oh, no. you know, that's where it goes too far. You know, I get, you know, my fair share of hostile emails, and I often write the person back. I mean, they're just nasty. You know, I don't even want to say the things that they write to me. And then I'll write them back and say, you know, thanks for the letter. Are you having a hard day? I mean, this is, you know, pretty harsh. I mean, I'm just trying to do the right thing. Oh, my God, I never thought you'd write back. Oh, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have been so nasty. You know, it's a little bit like driving in the car in L.A., you know, where people flip each other off. They wouldn't do that on a sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know, without the anonymity of being in the car, you know, social media is a little bit like that. And, you know, what's the solution to that? Well, just new norms. I mean, just come on, just social pressure to be nicer. It's hard to do sometimes. I know I get upset too on social media and say, I'll go on a rant about guns, for example. And then, you know, I lose a bunch of followers and I get a bunch of angry emails from gun owners. It's like, oh yeah, I'm not really anti-gun, but I can see how you, what I said sounds like that. So we all have to be careful about that.
So one thing that interests me is that much of this move to censor speech often comes down to what the person who wants to do the censoring, you know, what groups they see as part of their own coalition and what groups they see as part of the opposing coalition. So they're always happy to ban speech coming from the other side, but they're happy to engage in the same sort of speech if it's accusing their own enemies. So you'll find, oh, well, we don't want, you know, things that could be offensive about race. Well, it's only races that happen to be part of their particular political coalition, it seems like. Where if you talk about, you know, people on the other side, they're like, oh, well, we can say whatever we want about them, and that's not a problem. So it's not that they're out to stamp out racism or hate speech writ large, it's that they're out to stamp out anything that the other side says about their own side.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, the political coalition seems to be even stronger than the sensitivity to race issues, because people like Larry Elder, who is a black conservative, or Thomas Sowell, Candace Owens now, very provocative black African-American scholar, you know, they Condoleezza Rice, Ayaan Hirsi Ali, you know, they've all been canceled and hammered and criticized and so on by liberals because they're not towing the proper line. I write about Ayaan Hirsi Ali in the book because, first of all, there's a backfire effect there where she was supposed to give the commencement speech at Columbia University and, you know, get an honorary doctorate and the whole thing. And then, you know, the campus went crazy because why? I mean, here you have Ayaan Hirsi Ali. So she's a black woman who is a champion of women's rights and civil liberties. Well, she's critical of Islam because that was the religion she was born and raised in and was the victim of female genital mutilation and a forced marriage that she escaped from and, you know, moved to Amsterdam, learned a new language, became a member of parliament there, moved to America, and so on. You would think that liberals should hold her up as, you know, this is like the next great champion of women's rights. No. She got canceled and, you know, hammered. And then, to their credit, the Wall Street Journal published her commencement speech. So this is what I call the other backfire effect. That is, you know, instead of a couple hundred college students on campus who are, half of them aren't even listening to the graduation speech, instead you get 2.5 million people, the readership of Wall Street Journal, read what she was going to say. So, ha! But, you know, that, you know, this whole intersectionality theory is the problem, that you have these intersecting coalitions or preferences. So, you know, if I'm a white male, so, you know, white, straight, middle-aged male, so I'm about as bad as it comes, you know. But if you're, say, a bisexual, African-American, Islamic, whatever, just add two or three more, you know, you've got all the boxes checked. You know, this is really a bad path to go down. What is the end game here? Where can this possibly lead to Martin Luther King's dream of not judging people by the color of their skin or all these other boxes, but instead by the content or the character? You know, that's the opposite of what we should be doing. So we have to get off that track. It's just, there's no good end to that.
So how about, I want to bring up one form of speech that I've seen that's been highlighted by the coronavirus, and that is anti-vax speech. And maybe other claims about things like chiropractors being able to cure your COVID-19 by getting a spine adjustment, or healing crystals, and all sorts of nonsense out there that doesn't really work and is advertised from time to time as actually doing something right now that it can't possibly do. I mean, is there a state interest in stepping in and saying, no, you can't, you know, you can't say those things. We're not going to wait for better speech to rise to the top. You cannot sell, you know, crystals as a as a way to cure corona.
Yeah, that's certainly a hard one, because there, if somebody is fraudulently doing something that causes harm, then the state does have an interest in that. We do have regulatory laws about food and drugs, for example, and for good reason. I support that. But, you know, chiropractic, is that the same thing? What about acupuncture? You know, crystals is moving even further away from that. You know, it's not doing anything. Okay, so I guess the concern would be, if by doing these useless things like homeopathy, where's the harm? Well, I can see where if somebody gets coronavirus, they should be going to the ICU to go on a ventilator or take the drugs or whatever. But instead they're doing this other thing, okay? Or let's say, take a more contemporary example of the hydrochloroquine, which I actually tried for 2 days. My doc, who's a good friend of mine, told me he's going on, this was about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago now. You know, he's going on it. He's, you know, works at this big hospital in LA. You know, really worried about getting it and, you know, some evidence that it might work even prophylactically. So he went on it, wrote me a script, and I thought, all right, I'll try it. You know, and then I could really feel the toxins. It's really quite toxic, and I didn't like doing that prophylactically. If I get it, maybe I'll try again. But see, this hydrochloroquine, this is in this gray area. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. We don't have the gold standard of the, you know, randomized controlled trials yet on a large number, and, you know, people are going crazy because so many people are dying. Let's fast track it. Well, you can only fast track it so much. You know, there's going to be a certain risk there. That's, you know, that idea, once you start censoring or outlawing things like chiropractic or crystals or whatever, and pretty soon, what if it expands and includes the hydrochloroquine? Now, maybe it doesn't work, but what if it did work? Or maybe in conjunction with a Z-Pak, it works. You know, we just don't know. And so I don't fault Trump for saying the things he said, even though Fauci kind of tempers him a little bit. That's good. That's also good. Let's, you know, Trump say whatever he wants, fine, go on Twitter. But let Fauci speak. And he is. You know, there's another one of these conspiracy. You know, Trump is silencing Fauci. And then I see Fauci on every other show on television every night. It's like, well, apparently he's not censoring very, very well. Yeah.
So one example. One example I saw was Jim Baker, the televangelist, made his comeback, and he was trying to sell the silver solution.
That's what I was going to say. Do I have to send that back? I don't get to use it.
Yeah. So there, I would say, you know, that's a food and drug thing. Although, you know, a lot of these alternative medicine people try to slip under the law by not calling it a drug or a food, that it's a supplement. You know, that kind of thing. I'm not sure what Baker was doing. I know he got censored. I don't know what he got, but, you know, scolded by Cuomo. And I think the state of New York came down pretty hard on him, I think, because he was selling something that's pure quackery. That would be that's not speech. That's, you know, illegal, doing something illegal in that already recognized regulatory category.
So we had a pastor here in Florida who got arrested, I think, last weekend. And I forget his name, but I looked him up on Wikipedia, and this guy has every crazy belief there is. But yeah. But his most recent thing was that coronavirus is fake, it's for pansies, and he was going to hold services in his mega church anyway, and he had everybody shaking hands and hugging each other, and they eventually arrested him, and I think he stopped holding service. Seems like a violation of speech on the one hand, but on the other hand, also a public nuisance and a danger in a time like this.
Yeah, and here I would have to say that's not a speech thing, because there, you know, the freedom for me to swing my arm ends at your nose. They're potentially harming other people because they can, you know, carry the contamination outward into the world. Therefore, it's not consenting adults doing whatever they want, no harm to anybody else. It's not in that category. So there, in case of emergencies like this, I think the touch of the state has to be a little firmer than usual, despite our norms of, you know, free expression and free assembly and all that. You know, I'd be tempted to say, well, you know, let the crazies kill each other with this disease, but that's not the problem. That's not the issue. You know, it's that they then, from the church, carry the virus to the supermarket, and they're not being careful with gloves and masks and so on. you know, that's the problem. Just apply the harm principle there, I would say.
So you could wind up with a – I think given the extraordinary circumstances right now, you could wind up with government being a little, you know, essentially overstepping their bounds, arresting someone, letting them go, and then the charges eventually gets dropped once, you know, once the pandemic passes.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I think there would be a – I think it would be tough to sort of continue prosecution of cases like that after it sort of moved on.
Yeah, but again, once you start down that road, well, we're just going to hold them for a while.
Yeah.
That's what autocrats do. They jump on opportunities like that. Apparently that's what is happening in Hungary and Turkey, probably North Korea. No one knows what's going on in North Korea. They just say, we have no virus here at all. The virus is afraid to come into North Korea. Right. China, you know, I don't trust what they say. There's maybe these are crazy conspiracy theories. Maybe not. You know, this business of like, why is it that, you know, like a million cell phone accounts were closed? You know, it's because they're dead. Well, I don't know. I mean, are the conspirators covering this up so dumb that they would just go and close down cell phone accounts and no one would notice? I don't know. You know, so they're again, part of this, you know, this principle I call the, you know, the mind, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. The mind abhors a vacuum of explanation. Where there's mystery, that's where the quackery comes in, the crazy conspiracy theories come in, and so on. When we don't have an understanding, you know, autism and vaccines, we don't know the cause of autism, therefore vaccines or whatever. That happens quite commonly in, you know, cancer quackery. The cancers we can cure, there's very little quackery. The cancers we can't cure, there's not so much quackery. And I think we're going to see that for a few more weeks until we get a handle on the coronavirus. I mean, we know what it is. They've sequenced this DNA and so on. But until, you know, we get the curve to flatten and then we have a vaccine for it, then, you know, I think that the crazies are going to come out of the woodwork.
Yeah. That means I'm going to have to return my Alex Jones toothpaste, too. My God.
Not only Jim Baker, but who's the other guy that was cursing the virus away? Satan.
Yeah.
And he was blowing at it.
Yeah, he was like blowing.
He was blowing the wind of God.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. The wind of God. Yeah, he was these 1980s televangelists, you know, that came of age then. They're still around. Yeah. You know, it's amazing.
It's good business, must be.
I guess so, but again, we have to tolerate the crazies like that, you know, for they are our devils, which applies quite interestingly there. You know, for our own safety sake.
Wow. Great talk again. We look forward to the book. Giving the Devil His Due, and it's Reflections of a Scientific Humanist. Is that you?
Humanist. Yeah, that's me.
Well, that's my Canadian accent, you know?
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. I like
Humanist.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So, anyway, thank you very much, and we'll have the book posted on our website. And, of course, you have a website. Do you want to give that out?
Oh, yeah. Skeptic.com is the magazine website, and MichaelShermer.com is my personal website. And, of course, you go to Amazon and get the book there or any of my other books and so forth. So, thanks, guys, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well,
love the show.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.